Welcome to this podcast. Today I'm joined by Alex Jan, director at ARUP, and Simon Jeffrey, who is a policy officer at the Centre for Cities. And we're going to be talking about Urban Voices, which is the annual survey of UK city leaders being launched in early December, and it's the 2019 edition. So, Simon, give us a heads up in terms of what the policy priorities have been in 2019 and how they compared to last year's survey.
Well, I think there are three main takeaways from the report this year. Number one is climate change. 50% of respondents put climate change in their top three priorities, unprompted. And compared to last year, where only a couple of people actually referenced it, that's clearly risen up the agenda significantly. And then the second was housing. 44% of respondents put that in their top three. And that remains steady as a significant issue for leaders across the country. And then third, it was on transport. Now, 29% of our respondents put transport as one of the key priorities when unprompted. But where that's different than last year is where inclusive growth was a big topic, which people were bringing up without any guidance. That pretty much dropped out of the list this year. So the big changes are climate change in at the top, housing still in there, transport, but then what's dropped away is that focus on inclusive growth.
Alex, your reflection on that? That's very much a sort of, I suppose, the climate change has definitely gone up the national agenda, but also seems to be making its way down to the local as well.
Yeah, Andrew, I think that's right. I think in part the fact that climate change has taken that dramatic leap on the agenda of what city leaders are saying is reflective of events in the year. So the very high profile demonstrations that have taken place, I think some of the headline grabbing stories in terms of fires and floods, problems that the UK's seen, and obviously there's a question as to when the survey took place and where some of those events have occurred, but you do generally get the sense that this is a reflection of what is uppermost in the public's mind, and that's actually reflected in some of the opinion polling of the public that's taken place.
And part of the transport issue, Simon, was in to do with modal shift, thinking about how we get more people out of cars and into public transport. Is that right?
Absolutely. Last year, the number one priority for transport spending was roads within their area. That's dropped down the list. And actually now it's modal shift and encouraging specifically bus use. And so there's clearly potentially linked in with that climate change agenda, but also where we see where inclusive growth is mentioned, trying to ensure that there is public services, good public transport, that trying to improve those alternatives to car are really increasing for city leaders.
And so were there other issues outside of the top three that we would want to highlight in terms of things on city leaders' minds?
And there's the issue around public services. When we are city leaders, what were the main things they were trying to do to deal with the increase in demands that they're facing and the reductions in resources to deal with that? Well, number one, 75% said that they were commercialising their services to try and bring some money in. And then, you know, below that, it was about reforming the services that they have to try and do that for a lower cost. And, you know, that was something that was seen in the Cities Outlook 2019 that we launched. And that said that, you know, 10 years of austerity have massively cut the day-to-day spending that local authorities have. And you can see that in the responses here. Mm. They're trying to, you know, make that money work as efficiently as possible.
So financial pressure is interesting, Alex. Changing the way that local authorities and cities go about their business, not just in terms of reducing the services in what they provide, but actually trying to deliver them in different ways.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, isn't it, Andrew, because this is a sort of Damocles sword or double-edged sword, should we say, for local government. As you know, Simon's rightly pointed out, local government's seen sort of 40-odd percent reduction in its cash grant from central government after the last decade or so. Other bits of the public sector have been protected, as we know, including the NHS. And local authorities somehow have managed to come through that austerity and, you know, commercialisation, so charging people for some of the services that local authorities provide, which may have previously been free at the point of use, is one way in which they have managed to balance the books. So, you know, the problem is, in a way, Andrew, that, you know, they've demonstrated they're good at coping with these reductions. The risk is that central government sees this as an opportunity not to restore levels of funding or to you know, allocate resources to other bits of the public sector, which remarkably have not been under the same pressure.
No, penalised by their own success and good endeavours, I thought, is always a kind of interesting reflection, isn't it? In the survey, Simon, we also explore the nature of the relationships that cities and the city leaders have with local and national partners. Just say a little bit about what's coming out there.
Well, from those relationships, there's a clear divide. Cities feel that they have a good relationship with their local businesses and their local community groups. That's sort of 80 or 90% positive. But when it comes to civil servants and ministers, it's kind of 50 down to 40% positive. And actually for ministers, 13% of our respondents said that they viewed that relationship as negative.
Alex, you've got a reflection on that? And in terms of, you know, cities reaching out into their localities, looking to build partnerships and relationships with community groups and business representatives, less so with Whitehall? What's your take on that?
Yeah, I mean, I guess that, you know, as some of these authorities, particularly the combined authorities, have kind of grown into their roles, if you will, and they've established more, you know, closer relationships, hopefully, with business and others in civil society. The fact that these numbers, and they're very big numbers, which in terms of the positive relationships that respondents are citing with business, community groups, and indeed neighbouring local authorities, remarkably. I think that perhaps reflects the confidence that's grown in these organisations, the fact that there is seen to be common endeavour. You know, we know that business and local authorities, amongst others, are nervous about the effect of things like Brexit on their local economies, on lower skilled workers. And of course, by clubbing together, by working together with other local authorities, not just under the duty to cooperate, but perhaps by thinking about shared services, ways to provide things more efficiently, I think just engaging perhaps improves relationships. And, you know, in terms of the national agenda, I just wonder if fatigue is set in a bit in terms of, you know, local government is probably weary of asking and not getting very much back from the centre, certainly in financial terms. And of course, central government has been preoccupied and transfixed with the Brexit saga, which means they haven't really perhaps had the capacity to engage with many other things which local government is trying to deliver day in and day out.
Yeah, and that's a perfect link to the third area, I suppose, we explore in the survey, which is the extent to which our urban leaders feel that their issues and their voice and their perspective are represented and heard at the national scene in Whitehall and in Westminster, and it's not good news.
No, 62% of the respondents said that their needs to really support their areas were not being responded to by national government. 28% though did say that that was, you know, satisfactory or good in terms of getting from national government what they felt their places needed to be successful.
So Alex, I mean, we're talking in a period of a general election. Your thoughts on, you know, the nature of that relationship, but I guess, you know, moving forward, how can we make it a more positive experience? What does government need to do? What does cities need to do?
Well, I mean, it is remarkable, isn't it? Because a sort of quick glance at the various manifestos of the main parties mean that, you know, there's really not that much about cities on the national political agenda. And you do kind of wonder to what extent they're already factored in or banked in, whatever the phrase is, from a national political perspective. And there's a remarkable statistic out today which said that 14 million voters in the UK have lived in constituencies which haven't changed political control since the Second World War. And I wonder, I do wonder if quite a few of them are maybe in our urban areas. And, you know, there's sort of, we've seen Labour Party and maybe the others will follow suit coming out with sort of regional manifestos in the last week or so. But it is a remarkable phenomenon of our system that politicians appear to be incentivized to focus on marginal constituencies and not the major cities, despite the fact that A, the major cities are a big part of the political landscape in terms of number of MPs. And secondly, certainly in the case of London and parts of the South East, are the big generators of cash for the provision of public services across the country.
Brilliant. You can find much more detail in our report, Urban Voices, UK City Leaders Survey 2019. My guests today have been Simon Jeffrey and Alex Jang. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Thank you.